You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. In the green room on this Thursday, Bobby Warshaw, Matt Doyle, here with me. It's early in the morning.
Era Penal!
We once again have the World Cup on.
How do you say that in French? Doyle is just ravaging. Jose Luis Pekerman.
I mean, that is the way this thing goes. 0-0 right now. If you hear a screaming, that's what's going on. We hope you're enjoying the big tournament. Of course, Major League Soccer, as you know, was back last week and is back once again this weekend. We got some good games for you as well. Seattle-Portland on Fox. That's a good one. Atlanta-Orlando on ESPN, also a very, very good one. San Jose-LA on Unimas. Toronto Red Bulls, also on Fox. I mean, the World Cup lead-in is making it really easy for you to just sit in front of your television all day long watching quality soccer. So check MLSsoccer.com for all those listings.
We did not get your take on this last week, Andrew.
Uh-oh.
What's your worry meter on Toronto FC?
My worry meter?
Yeah, what's it up to?
I don't know if I'm worried because I don't have any personal stakes.
Right, but you know what I mean.
I think their worry meter should be, it should be like pushing into the red zone right now.
Yeah.
It's been in kind of yellow, you know, yellow to orange, and now it's kind of like, uh-oh. And if you keep dropping points, you're in big trouble. And if you keep dropping points against the best teams in the league, it starts to make us wonder, and I have to imagine it would have to make them wonder within that locker room whether they're the same team they were last year.
I want to hone in on what you said about how you don't have anything personally at stake.
I don't.
I think about this a lot. Does that make us, I think we all do things like that. Does that make us better at this job or worse? Because think about Stephen A. Smith, who makes way more money at this job than we do. Mm-hmm. He feels personally aggrieved by every sports wrongdoing ever done. You know, like somebody hires the wrong coach and that man's like liver wants to fall out,
mm-hmm.
you know, but here we are being like, yeah, you know, like I don't really like Toronto that much, so it doesn't bother me.
I mean, I root for narrative you know, people at home are going to groan about that. But I don't actually believe that Stephen A. Smith believes everything that he says.
But he sells it really well. That's the point.
For sure. So maybe I just need to be a better salesman.
So you're saying that we need to be more on the Stephen A. Smith / Skip Bayless level?
I'm saying they make more money than we do.
They do.
That is.
They do.
Yeah, well.
Bobby trusts, you know, the free market.
They don't have targeted allocation money, though. Laissez-faire.
I think it's very clear what side I think we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know who else makes a lot more money than we do? Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
He does.
Did you see him? And we'll get to Mauro Diaz and a possible transfer and Eric Rometty and his new move to Atlanta United, that defensive midfielder they've been clamoring for months and months and months.
Are we about to talk about butt tattoos?
We are definitely about to talk about butt tattoos. What?
They're gorgeous.
That's incredible art. But the man put, I have to imagine, many, many, many thousands of dollars and many, many hours and mm-hmm. much personal pain, although at this point I can't imagine that tattoos are painful for Zlatan. They probably weren't ever. It hurts the needle more than it hurts him. But he has two massive, terrifying eyes on his buttocks.
On his cheeks.
Yes. I mean,
I
can't even imagine getting a tattoo at this point. You know, I always had my dreams as a young man because you think you're kind of edgy and you're like, I'm going to go get
it's
a tattoo.
It's actually edgier now to not have a tattoo. Yeah,
I know. So I've kind of stumbled into being cooler than I actually am. I can't imagine being like, sketch me out two terrifying eyes, both of which the pupils look like they would suck you in and then say, by the way, I want those on my behind.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff gets talked about in the locker room, right, Bobby? I mean,
yeah, people definitely talk about tattoos.
Yeah.
I feel like we
don't want to hear on this show. It's like you don't want to know how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
I don't think you guys really want to know what is said in the shower of a professional locker room.
I'm both happy.
HR definitely doesn't want to hear.
For
I mean,
sure
HR listens to these episodes.
Yeah, you know what? We're gonna stop it right there. Let's get to Mauro Diaz. Let's get to the special little unicorn, Paul Tenorio, our friend of many, many months, who's now at The Athletic. I'm not saying our friendship is over. I'm saying it's changed. Is out here reporting, and when he reports, you got to pay attention. And Paul says that Mauro Diaz might be on the move. He says, in fact, that he's already had his exit physical with FC Dallas, and that he is on the way, potentially here, something's got to get done, to a club in UAE. This reminds me of Christian Nemeth in some ways. It reminds me of last summer when FC Dallas went through all that transfer hubbub, drama, whatever you want to call
it. Non-transfer hubbub,
yeah,
drama.
Well, yeah. They went through the drama, but they didn't come out on the other side with any concrete moves, and they missed the playoffs, perhaps in part because of it.
Right.
You were on this show saying you'd take him over Miguel Mirón, so how do you feel now?
I feel bummed. Mauro Diaz is – I mean, this decade, I don't think I've had more fun watching any player more fun. Like, I've had more fun watching Mauro Diaz than anybody. I love those classic Argentinian, South American-style playmakers, and he's out of that mold, the sort of Valderrama, Echeverri, you know, Juan Román, Riquelme mold, and we saw the very best of him in 2016, and when I thought he was, you know, right there with David Villa as the best player in the league, and I think that if he had not gotten hurt, there's a decent chance that we're talking about FC Dallas as the first team to win a domestic treble in MLS, and there's a decent chance that we're talking about FC Dallas's CONCACAF Champions League run last year, but. Achilles injuries are devastating. He's been really good this year when he's played, but you know, we've seen Oscar Pereja decide to use him selectively, and we're still at a point where this league has to be a selling league. Like, if the right offer comes in for a player, and it works for the player, like he's. Mauro Diaz probably is going to quadruple his salary. If the right offer comes in, you do right by the player, you make some money, and you have to be ready to move on to the next guy.
Right now, Mauro Diaz, according to the Players Union, making just shy of $1 million for FC Dallas. Just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm.
He will be making more than that in the United States.
I would expect that he would be making more than that in the UAE.
I once asked Doyle his 10 favorite players to watch in Major League Soccer, and he responded, Mauro Diaz, Mauro Diaz, Mauro Diaz, 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 Diaz. Here's my question, guys. Do we think that FC Dallas is upset about selling him? Do we think that Oscar Pereja and Fernando Clavijo think that the best version of FC Dallas had Mauro Diaz in the starting lineup?
Yes, because every time that he was healthy and available and not on short rest this year in a big, he started, and he mostly delivered. I mean, they have a much better record with him than without him, and that's been true for the last 4 years. I think you could argue, like, do they think he will ever be the player he was in 2015 and 16 again? And maybe no.
I'm not sure I totally agree with you. I think that the way that they want to rebuild this team, get that foundation right again, is revolved around working hard defensively and catching teams on the break. And I'm not sure Mauro Diaz fits into either of those things, that he can really help you have a firm defensive foundation the way Portland does now and the way FC Dallas did in 2015 and 2016, and then also counterattack. So I actually do think that FC Dallas is perfectly fine selling him and bringing on the next guy that fits their system a little better.
Look, I think the key to that, and that may well be true, I'm with Doyle in the sense that I want to have the opportunity to watch Mauro Diaz up close and personal any chance that I can get. But again, this goes back to not having those personal stakes. My job isn't contingent on the fact that FC Dallas gets wins, that they don't collapse in the middle of the season. And if you're Fernando Clavijo and you've got last summer in mind and you're thinking, oh my God, our incredible season went down so quickly because we just didn't handle this the right way. If Mauro Diaz comes to you and says, I have a big offer for me and my family, I need to take this offer. Mm-hmm. And the offer to you, to the club, is right. You have to take it.
Yep.
You have to take it, and you can't look back. And I think that both sends a message to your fan base, but also, more importantly, to the players in your locker room, that, like, if these things happen, if you excel, if another club comes in for you, if it makes sense to all parties involved, we will listen and we will do what's right for us, for you, and it will work out in the end, because it just didn't last year. It cratered so hard that there's scar tissue there, and if there's not scar tissue there, I don't know what the hell they're doing.
And they just did this with Anton Nedyakov as well. Who transferred a week and a half ago now to back home to
Ludogorets
in Bulgaria. So they have learned their lesson from last year. And look, they went out and they got Mosquera this offseason. And Mosquera can play as a central midfielder, kind of a number 10. He does it differently than
and perhaps
than
in
Diaz
a way
does.
That they prefer.
No. No, but it's fine. He can do it.
I don't understand. Every week on this show, mm-hmm. we talk about teams have an identity, don't have an identity. And finally, FC Dallas has an identity for the
What's
first
the
time
again.
What's the
point of having all these fast, direct attackers if you don't have anyone to release them into space? That's the function that Mauro Diaz served. Like, Mauro, FC Dallas was never a great possession team under Oscar Pereja. They weren't knocking around.
They tried to be, which is when they started to flub.
No.
In the past year, yes, they moved towards trying to be more of a possession team that could dictate games.
They didn't.
They tried.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, Mauro Diaz, to me, they were a team that always sat three quarters and always let Mauro Diaz send guys through into space. Bobby and I are disagreeing yeah. hard.
Yeah. They're both.
I
mean,
we could keep going, but I know Weeby really wants to move on.
They're both disagreeing and nodding at each other very, very so. Let's say they sell Mauro Diaz. This is not done yet, and Sam Stachel is going to come on in the second segment and give us an update on that and a whole bunch of other stuff from around Major League Soccer. Let's say they sell Mauro Diaz. What should they do with that outlay? Because that's the immediate ability to reinvest in their club. And will they keep the pace that they have now, which is basically 2 points per game, competing at the top of the Western Conference, and trying to forget about last summer and what happened afterwards? Back to the playoffs. Back to competing for trophies.
Here's my last point about Mauro Diaz. I think that their overall ceiling isn't as high, but the average output will be higher for the rest duration. But moving on, what do they do? Solidify what you're good at. This team was not about Mauro Diaz in terms of their long-term trajectory. This team was about Matt Hedges and the center midfielders. That's what makes FC Dallas, making it really hard for opponents, ensuring they don't get good opportunities, and hitting them on the break. That's when they've been at their best over the last few years, and it's just finding a player who can do similar. It's a little bit like what the Red Bulls did, right? Finding a player who can create those opportunities but fits a little better into your overall scheme.
Obviously, Bobby and I see it differently. I don't know exactly what they want to do. I don't know how highly they rate Mosquera, whether they want to play Lamar in that sort of pseudo number 10 role that he's played at times this year as Diaz has moved out to the left.
Why wouldn't they just play a 4-4-2 with
because
either
Hayes? Because they stink in a 4-4-2. And we've seen that since they lost Fabian Castillo, they have stunk in a 4-4-2. So I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if Paxton Pomykal gets out there on the field.
I mean, that's the whole point of this academy, right? You don't have a USL team.
Exactly.
You didn't give him the time to be ready to step in.
And I will tell you, like, I love that kid's talent, but he has not shown much of it at all this year when he's gotten minutes in MLS. So he's probably going to get an opportunity here, and we'll see how he does with it.
Atlanta United fans very happy on this Thursday, I assume. Eric Rometty. That is the name of their new defensive midfielder from Bonfield. Paid a transfer
Bobby
fee.
Bobby is so mad at me right
Why?
Now.
Why?
He's just.
I'm not mad.
Dead.
I wish that I had the evidence about the 4-4-2 and we actually had hard numbers. Because there's an answer. You might be right about the 4-4-2. Mm-hmm. When I have the eye test and when they pull that lineup up against most teams, I prefer that lineup. But you're right. If we actually had a record of their 4-4-2.
He's only half as mad as he's going to be when he sees my All-Star starting lineup.
Oh, I saw.
Oh, no. Which. You know Bobby's mad when he pretends like he's not paying attention anymore. Like, I know he's upset when he starts just staring at his phone because he's trying to distract himself from the bubbling anger within.
I'm not that angry. I think this is a good conversation about how to get the most out of a team and
Bobby
its players.
Bobby doesn't like skilled players is what it comes down to. He doesn't like skilled players.
I very much enjoy watching skilled players. I'm with you. Mauro Diaz, I love watching him play. I'm still not sure he's the best guy for that team.
Got to carry water. Eric Rometty's going to carry some water for Atlanta United. Jonathan Agbee's out for 2 to 3 months right now. That is the report. That's an issue for Atlanta United, but they've got the reinforcements in. They do have the depth to deal with it. What does this defensive midfield signing mean for them for the second half of the season? Does he walk right into the starting lineup? Big Red Jeff Lewinowitz out? What happens?
I want to start on this just in my head because I like building rosters together. The big question is how do they get all this attacking talent? So far lately, it's been Ezequiel Barco in the 11, Tito Villalba out of the 11. I wonder if having a rangier defensive midfielder, somebody who can cover more ground, says we might just go 4-1-4-1, get all of the horses onto the field, and have this guy really just try and put out fires everywhere.
I think there's some validity to that, and it wouldn't entirely shock me, but I think the likelier version is either we see we're definitely going to see Remedy and Lorenwitz together a decent amount, but I think
especially with by the way, Tam signing,
right?
Yeah. I do think that we'll see a 4-2-3-1 with Gressel moved inside to that two line as the Nagby replacement, and we've seen a little bit of him play there.
So where would the new guy play?
The new guy would be in place of Lorenwitz. Lorenwitz would go to the bench, and then you have Villalba, Almiron, and Barco in the starting lineup behind Joseph. That's the way to get all the young skill guys on the field. And I do think we'll see some of that, but it'll be...
Why hasn't Gressel played right back? Why are they picking Escobar? Is it just defensive solidity that they don't want the right back flying down the field? They wanted almost a somewhat center back there?
It's tough to say. Escobar hasn't impressed me hardly at all from what I've seen, but they made an investment in him, and when coaches make an investment in a guy, that's the guy who tends to play until he proves he can't.
See, Barco, Ezekiel, $50 million goes a long way. You know what? I just got an email. Breaking news here in Major League Soccer. What we all assume to be true is now true. Wayne Rooney has joined DC United
Who's
as a
that?
Designated player. He signed a 3.5-year contract. Of course, he will occupy that DP slot on the roster. He is going to be added once July 10th hits. The news is finally official. They're saying it's a seminal moment for our fans and organization. That's Jason Levy, and the general partner and CEO. Wayne Rooney, 32 years old, is a member of DC United. I mean, I feel like we've discussed this one to death in large part, but now that it's here, how do you feel, Bobby? You're a guy, you've been a DC United fan for
a long
time.
Grew up a DC United fan, went to watch games at RFK in 96, 97, 98. Ben also was my favorite player growing up. But I think a lot of DC United fans in the last decade, I've lost touch with it. I have a brother who lives down by DC who went to games at RFK with me in 96, has also lost touch. And I'll tell you what, I'm back into it. I am now excited to watch DC United play. My brother will go for the first time to a DC United game in 10 years. And what more can you ask for than to be excited right now?
All it took was Wayne Rooney, huh? But you're also a Manchester United fan. Do you think it's unique to you, or do you think the greater area, do you think people are going to get hyped up for this? I mean, no. I personally think that Wayne Rooney has enough name value to immediately draw more attention than this team has gotten in a long, 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 long time. I mean, there has not been a player on this team of this caliber, of this name value. I mean,
Ever.
Yeah. When's the last? Never.
The last time they really swung for the fences with a guy who had international recognition, unless I'm forgetting someone.
Hamdi Salihi. Yep, exactly. You're right. Hamdi
I was going to say Miguel Gallardo. Back in like 2007, one of the first DPs, and he lasted 10 games, if that. You understand why they're doing it. You know, there's fan interest for, you know, people like Bobby and his brother, and there's name recognition nationally. You know, there will be, at some point, there will be DC United highlights on SportsCenter because of this. Hopefully it moves the needle in terms of bringing people to that stadium. And I think the big one is sponsorship money. The sponsors love signings like this. He is a global star, you know, and everybody knows he's not the player that he was 3 years ago, but he's a global star. You can go into any country, you know, any city in the world and find Wayne Rooney fans.
And that's so I love that point about the sponsorship. I want to point out something Sebastian Salazar said from ESPN, mentioning that he would have liked to have seen them get a Latin player because it meshes better with the DC soccer community, which is totally fair. The only part to this is that Wayne Rooney, as you said, resonates everywhere. And DC United has worldwide brands. They have Audi and they've got Volkswagen as their main sponsors. Those companies don't just want DC area people. They want worldwide area people. So Wayne Rooney gets your brand in front of TVs in Singapore, in Asia, in Europe, in South America, and I'm saying this very poorly, but I think we get the idea that they're trying to use Wayne Rooney as a kicking off point to make more money to do bigger things down the road.
And by the way, more money probably equals players of that caliber that Sebastian Salazar is talking about. If you look at the trends in Major League Soccer and you look at where these players are coming from, if you say, I want a young player who's ambitious, who wants to grow within my club, who perhaps even wants to use this as a stepping stone, you know, be the next Miguel Almiron, the next Tito Villalba, whatever it might be the next Albert Elis, you can go get those players.
And Wayne Rooney is the first piece to then get 5 or 10 down the line instead of 1 or 2 now.
Right.
Yeah. And DC, I mean – DC still got a lot of work to do on that roster.
No doubt.
But let's give them credit because they have brought in guys like Lucho Acosta and Yamil Asad over the past couple of years. And these are good, young Latin American players. They went out and signed Jose Mora, the left back, and Ulysses Segura.
Junior Moreno. World Cup. Yep.
You know, and credit to Ben Olsen for making an open combat. Like Chris Durkin, a US U18 or U20 international, has beat out Junior Moreno. So, like, it is not a stale and sort of vanilla DC United roster. Now, it hasn't come together in the way that they'd hoped. Maybe the Rooney is the piece to fix that. But, like, if you look at it, Rooney is the outlier in terms of age and in terms of origin. So I get Sebi Salazar's criticism, and I understand. Like, I hope that they go there and get their own, you know, Leandro Gonzalez Perez, because the back line needs that kind of help.
Yeah, it needs help.
Yeah. But, like, it's you know, don't let this overshadow the fact that there's a good, young, diverse core in this team.
3.5-year deal means this is through 2021. That's a long time. He will be, I think, let's see, he'll turn 33 later this season, I believe. So you're talking what? You're talking 36 years old at the end of this deal?
Yeah, David Villa's age last year. So...
Could he be a David Villa?
Villa's 36 this year.
Right. Is that the comparison that we're looking at? Could he be a David Villa? Can he be an MVP candidate?
I don't think so. I mean, he was pretty good the first half of the year and in the Premier League this year. And I mean, he scored 10 goals by December. And then he was not as good in the second half when Sam Allardyce came on. Bobby's shaking his head.
By the way, I just want to shout out to James Lambert via the Hot Take Hotline, which I'm looking at right now. He predicted and sent this to us that Rooney would arrive today at Dole's at 2 p.m. Eastern before the news ever came out. So we have the sources in our mailboxes telling us this thing's going down.
Wayne Rooney hasn't been good for 2 or 3 years.
Hasn't been good or hasn't been as good as Wayne Rooney was when he was among the best players in the entire world?
Straight up hasn't been good. And I pains me to say that because, like I said, I'm a United fan, I'm a Wayne Rooney fan, but just hasn't been good. But as I said in the video that's going to come out sometime today, that I just think it's more about him having the captain's armband. He should not be a leader within your team. He should be the problem child. When Wayne Rooney is the problem child, yelling at everything and everyone and giving no craps about anything around him, he is going to be at his best. And I hope that's the Wayne Rooney we see, saying, I don't care that I'm the poster boy of this franchise or this league. I'm okay yelling and getting red cards and all that.
By the way, just to crystallize it, Wayne Rooney is now trending both in the United States and worldwide. So
there you go.
Yeah, DC hasn't trended worldwide in been a while. DC
a little bit. That 2013 US Open Cup win didn't quite do it.
No. Look, the first game for Wayne Rooney will be July 14th at Audi Field. The first game at Audi Field for DC United. They will host the Vancouver Whitecaps. Guess who will be there? Extra Time Live, driven by Continental. We got a pregame show on the field beforehand. We're going to try to get a pickup game together. Dave Goss is going to be out in the crowd eating pupusas babies.
Do we think that Goss will be speaking fluent Russian by then?
He probably won't come back. They won't let him come back. He'll have chatted his way into some sort of permanent position in Russia, and that'll be it for Dave Goss. His time as X-Time Radio host will be done and dusted. But we are so excited to go be there for that game. That's one game. Mm-hmm. Does this team have any chance of making the playoffs?
They do. It's not a great chance, but they do have a chance because they have that backloaded home schedule. Obviously, their record now is not great. They have 10 points through 12 games, but when you have 15...
But they've only played 12 games. Yeah. Nobody's played fewer.
Yeah. That said, 0.83 points per game. They're the only team in the Eastern Conference below 1 point per game. They have some ground to make up. They now have... Unless Rooney is just a complete Gerard, they now have more firepower to go out and do it. But they have to figure out how to be better defensively. They have to figure out how to stop giving up soft goals, and they have to figure out how to protect leads. And Wayne Rooney's not going to help with any of that. So I would hope that Dave Casper and the DC United front office is still doing some work.
How do you play him if you're Ben Olsen, Bobby? Now, obviously, Yamil Assad's going to move to left back. And then from there, you've got a foundation that you can work with.
Here's the only thing I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Here's what I would say. You just can't play Wayne Rooney as your highest striker. I mean, maybe you can, but I would be very surprised. He's just not energetic at this point. He can't stretch defenses, both because of his body and the way he plays the game. He'd rather be a guy that gets on the ball and facilitates the game rather than the person stretching the field for his teammates. So I would expect him to play in behind a Darren Maddox, let Maddox stretch the field, and Rooney pick up the ball in those pockets and then spray to his teammates and try and get in the box.
What's that mean for Lucho Acosta?
I don't know.
Out. Lucho Acosta, we can say that Lucho Acosta has not lived – he's been poor in his time in Major League Soccer. And of all the South American guys who are expected to lead their team as number 10, he has been the worst.
That's a take.
That is stringent.
But is it? I don't think it's a take.
I don't disagree with you in the sense that Lucho Acosta has been inconsistent. Lucho Acosta has not always been the most productive on the score sheet. Lucho Acosta is fun to watch, but isn't – he's not creating goals.
He's not as good as the other people who are at his position.
Three goals, 11 assists in 2016 in 2,100 minutes. Last year, 5 goals and 5 assists in 2,400 minutes, not great. This year, 1 goal, 6 assists in 800 minutes, which
Better.
Is very good.
Yeah. How do you get him on the field with Rooney if you're going to play Rooney in behind?
I think Rooney ends up putting Darren Maddox on the bench. I do think that Rooney ends up playing.
It might. It wouldn't surprise me. I just don't think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
All right, we will. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. DC United fans, we want to hear from you. Shoot us a text today, whatever you're thinking about Wayne Rooney. We're going to go to break. On their side, Gam, Tam, and Sam.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room. Bobby Warshaw and I, Matt Doyle off, I don't know, running an errand or something. We are with the Bird Dog, the original Bird Dog, MLS's very own, Sam Stajkal, at Sam Stajkal on Twitter. Sam, what's up, man? How's it going?
Pretty good, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Are you tired today? Of the Bird Dog?
Am I tired of the Bird Dog? Yet. Never. I'm never going to get tired of the Bird Dog. That's the best nickname I have.
I actually was thinking about making a new intro for you. I still really enjoy the, you know, Gam Tam Sam one, but I was thinking, you know, that intro part, you know, like, what is it, Duck Hunt? Like all the sounds of Duck Hunt.
Isn't that the sound that you get, like, when you lose a life or something?
Yeah, okay, so maybe I have some negative associations here. I'm sorry. We'll work on that. In the meantime, you've been reporting across Major League Soccer, and I want to start in the place I think is logical to start, which is Orlando City's open coaching job. What's going on there? We got the update from Paul Tenorio, but in these things, days matter. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys saw, but Taylor Twellman reported last night that Caleb Porter had turned down the job over the last 48 hours. I had heard, and I put out there on Twitter, that Orlando were leaning domestic in their search. So that would have been Porter, James O'Connor, or Mark Dos Santos. So if Porter is indeed out of the running by his own choice, which I think would kind of make sense from Caleb's point of view, then we're maybe looking at James O'Connor or Mark Dos Santos here. Obviously, O'Connor being a former Orlando City player back in their USL days, currently the coach of Louisville City in USL, and Mark Dos Santos, a lot of head coaching experience in the lower levels of North American soccer, and currently an assistant under Bob Bradley with LAFC. I expect it to be one of those two guys. Something to note, obviously, Orlando have been connected to a bunch of big-name Brazilians here over the past couple of weeks. Mark Dos Santos is, I believe, was born in Brazil, has Brazilian connections. So
I'm about to out bird dog you, Sam, because my people tell me that Mark is the leading candidate.
I've heard that. I've also heard that O'Connor's the leading candidate. So, you know,
I trust your bird dogging more than my bird dogging.
And if you're playing extra time radio, we'll just mark the whole board down.
At this point, I wouldn't be surprised with either, basically, is where we're at.
What do you think it is about? Is it money? Why are these the names that Orlando City is leaning toward? I mean, I know that they look at their squad and they say, we are set. You've got to win with this group, so come in and do it. And maybe in that sort of situation, it's hard to bring in that big-name coach who might come in and say, look, I need X amount of money to go make changes. I want to bring in my players. What's the logic here on your side?
I think it's exactly that. I think it's exactly what you just said. We saw Alex Letao come out over the weekend before their game against Montreal and basically say this isn't a rebuild. This is the roster that the new coach is going to have to work with. And this is the roster we believe in. And this is a roster we think can get to the playoffs. So they don't want to have a learning curve. And if you bring in a guy from Brazil or from somewhere else that isn't not only isn't familiar with MLS, but isn't familiar with his own players on Orlando, then there's going to be an even bigger adjustment, right? Whereas if you bring in a guy that has worked in USL, has worked in MLS, knows the players, knows the league, knows the tactics, knows the system, knows everything that's gone on and is going on around MLS, then that learning curve is going to be a lot shorter, a lot smoother, and it's going to maximize their chances of getting into the playoffs this year. So I think that's the main consideration here. We'll see how it shakes out. I mean, for me, it's interesting. The Caleb Porter thing, and again, it sounds like he's not going to be ending up taking that job, but that one always kind of was strange to me because I always kind of viewed him as pretty similar to Jason Kreis. So that one was a little bit of an eye scratcher or a head scratcher for me. But we'll see how it goes. I expect it to be O'Connor or Dos Santos here in the end, though.
Don't scratch your eyes, Sam. That's not good for you. No. Orlando City probably not going to be spending a ton of money this year. They've kind of already blown their wad in a lot of ways. FC Dallas, the other day on this very show, I was sitting here saying, I love what you're doing. Don't blow it up. Keep it together. Have a steady summer. And it looks like that might not be the case. Mauro Diaz, the special little unicorn, he was out of the lineup, and we wondered why. We wondered why he did not make the trip this weekend. It sounds like there's a possibility, Paul Tenorio reporting, that he could be headed to the UAE in a big money deal. What are you hearing on this one?
Yeah, so I'm hearing basically, you know, I followed up on Paul's reporting, not that Paul's reporting needed to really be followed up on, but I'm curious. And basically it sounds like that deal is tracking towards a conclusion. It's not done yet, and there are things that can go wrong in these sorts of transfers, but basically what I've been told is that, you know, they're working towards it, and at this point it's looking like it might happen. So that might be the end of the Mauro Diaz era in Dallas. Now, this is kind of interesting with Dallas, in my opinion. You know, last year they had the big transfer saga with Max Yarudi and Michael Barrios and San Lorenzo in Argentina, and them denying those bids. And that kind of playing a role in blowing up their season a little bit. So I talked to Fernando Clavijo about that a couple of weeks ago and just kind of like, hey, what's the plan if somebody comes in with a bid for one of your guys this summer? What'd you learn from last year and how are you going to prepare and what's the plan? So one of the things that he said is, you know, we need to be more transparent with our players, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But the most relevant thing, at least for FC Dallas going forward, should Mauro Diaz indeed move, he said it's not only talking to the players, but it's having replacements ready. And he mentioned having four or five targets lined up if they do move a guy, so that if in the event that one of their key players goes, they can move on those four or five guys and hopefully get one of them into camp pretty quickly. So if Diaz goes, I would expect them to go out and get a replacement pretty soon. Although, you know, they have Paxton Pomacall and a whole depth of midfielders that they've used when Mauro wasn't playing earlier this year that are capable of bridging the gap in between.
Are you hearing numbers here on Mauro Diaz?
I have not heard any numbers yet.
Do you have a feeling? I'm curious because we saw Christian Namath go to the Middle East, and it was such a good move for Sporting Kansas City, the allocation haul, the relative investment in Christian Namath. You know, if you're FC Dallas and you have this special player, I would have to imagine it would have to be a special number to bring him to get you to sell him.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well. I can't remember how much Namath went for. It seems like an eternity ago now. But I would hope that FC Dallas would be getting more for Mauro Diaz than Sporting Kansas City got for Christian Namath. But, you know, I think one of the things that maybe they learned from last year is if a guy wants to go, you kind of need to let him go. Otherwise, he's going to be miserable in your locker room and things might tank. So, you know, if it's the right move, if it hits a certain baseline, if it hits their number, then go for it. And for Mauro Diaz's perspective, I'm sure if he goes, he's going to be getting paid over there. So good for him on that front.
To add something on the player side of this. Whenever you hear the deal is almost done, but it's taking time, a lot of time at this point, you can step in if you have actual details on Mauro. I don't, just from the other experiences I've had, that we hear the deal is done, but it takes another week or two. What's often going on at that point is that the big numbers have been finalized, the transfer fee, the salary, and at this point, it's smaller things. When you move to a new country, you want to make sure you have somewhere to live, especially when you move into the Middle East. You want to make sure that your family can come with you. You want to make sure that you have a car ready for you. It's these final little things that are more about the player's lifestyle and making sure he can adjust quickly rather than the larger transfer stuff, which it sounds like is done.
By the way, MLS teams have gotten much better at that over the years. Mm-hmm. The team admins have more experience, they have more resources, there are more people on the team side to provide that transition, and that's going to be important this summer, Sam. Transfer window is coming, July 10th, my birthday. That's how everyone around the league can remember this, by the way. Joking. But if you want to send something to me, I'm totally cool with that. What are you hearing out there? What should we expect? Because honestly, it's not that far away. It's less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, it's coming up quick here. So a couple of things. One actually item that I wanted to get to that'll be decided before the transfer window open is Alexander Katai in Chicago. They have a option to extend his loan, which ends on June 30th. And as far as I know, what I heard yesterday is they have not yet made a decision on whether or not they're going to pick that up. He's training this week. He's expected to play in their game on the 30th against NYCFC. But he's obviously been kind of a key part of what they've been doing, at least recently. He had a little bit of a rough go at the start of the year, but he's been their kind of goal scorer and creative presence in the final third here over the last month or two. And we'll see where that goes. So that one's going to be decided here in the next 48 hours, though. So that'll be interesting. In terms of the transfer window, I mean, I think the big one everyone's looking at is Seattle, right? You know, they've been linked to Raul Ruiz Diaz. I fully expect that one to get done once, you know, I guess Peru's World Cup is about to be over here or is over. And, you know, once that gets finalized and he's able to kind of get out of Peru camp and open things up a little bit, I think that deal gets done pretty quickly. That'll be a huge money move. And I think we could see some other big money moves in the league this year. I think a team to keep an eye on is the LA Galaxy. Obviously, they have 3 DPs at the moment. But from what I'm hearing, and this is just kind of, you know, it's scuttlebutt at the moment, but I'm told that they could be moving on some other DPs, which would require them to move one of their current DPs out. So we'll see. There could be some activity, though, down there in LA. So think it'll be a big transfer window. Think there'll be some big money deals going down. Obviously Seattle are in the mix, and I think the LA Galaxy will be in the mix too.
Minnesota United fans are on the edge of their seat right now. You said big money deals, and they probably thought, ooh, maybe we're not the ones in the running there. Of course, they got their first DP in Darwin Quintero, and he's been very, very good for them so far. But we've heard a lot of talk from Manny Lagos about Dario Benedetti and others. They say he's still on their radar. You've done some reporting around that. Talk to Manny. What's coming this summer for Minnesota?
Yeah, so Nicolas Benedetti from Deportivo Cali.
Where am I Colombia. Getting Dario? Yeah.
Yeah, Benedetto. It's confusing. No, there's a lot of guys out there.
Gotcha.
You know? It's early in the morning. We'll give you a pass, sweetie. But, yeah, so what I'm hearing on Benedetti is that, you know, Minnesota obviously were in touch with him. In the primary transfer window, they made an offer to Cali. Apparently, it wasn't that close to what they were looking for. Ajax reportedly came in last month with a $10 million bid. That sort of was taken as a sign that, okay, this is done. He'll probably go there. Minnesota are out of it. However, I'm told that Benedetti's guys recently reached out and made it known that they would still be open to a move to MLS. However, they would be open beyond Minnesota. So it wouldn't just be Minnesota in the mix there if he does come to the league, although the Loons do have the right of first refusal on him. So, you know, if he wants to go to another team, he probably should have tried to avoid negotiating with one and getting an offer from one earlier if he wasn't going to take it. So we'll see there. In terms of what Minnesota are going to do in the window, I talked to Manny Lagos earlier, I guess, over the weekend, and he said they're looking for a left back. They're looking for some help on the wing. They've been linked to Romario Ibarra, who's a winger out of Ecuador. You know, so we'll see if they're able to get that one across the line.
A winger, you don't say.
Yeah, well, you know, to be fair, they've had a few of those guys go down this year.
Yeah, they have.
So, you know, they traded one as well in Sam Nicholson. So they actually do need some help. That could mean Alexi Gomez might be on his way out. We'll see what goes down there. I've heard they haven't loved what they've gotten from him so far.
A cup of coffee,
Sam, what kind of damning statement is that to sign a player and get rid of him 3 months later? I mean, isn't the point of doing your research and working hard to really trust your judgment? I mean, what can a player really do in 3 months except hate it and have to go, you know, take care of a family member or something back home? But that, to me, just says a ton about where Minnesota is at right now.
I mean, I don't know. We don't know the full circumstances, and we don't know that they are going to get rid of him. So, you know, I think we it's fair to let that one play out a little bit. But, you know, he hasn't produced like they thought he would. So, you know, whether that says a ton about where Minnesota's at, I'm not entirely sure.
And he's got a track record as well, by the way. He has not stayed in his last couple stops very long.
Yeah, no, he does for sure. But I think at the same time, if you can find a way to get out of a bad situation quickly that isn't working, I think that's a good way to go.
But almost every time a team signs an international player, it's a bad situation for the first 3 months.
No, that's a fair point. Although I think Darwin Quintero would probably say otherwise.
That's true. There's definitely some price
Minnesota,
threshold that you
Minnesota
can
would
that.
Say otherwise about Darwin Quintero. I mean, if you can find an upgrade, though, why not go and get the upgrade?
I think that statement applies to Sporting KC, no? The striker search was, I mean, every single window we've got the same song and dance. And I believe in Peter Vermees as a TD, as a leader of that organization, but at some point, either they got to get this done or say they're not going to do it and they stick with the guys they got. Kyrie Shelton's been good. Big thanks to Daniel Shalvey for putting on a plate for him. What's going to happen with this striker search? What is the odds? 1 to 10. 10 being they get it done, 1 being it doesn't happen, that this actually goes down this summer.
I would put that at an 8. How about that? Pretty likely, I would say. I talked to Brian Bliss last week about the striker search, and he said, yeah, we're still looking for a number 9. I think they've been pleased with what they've gotten out of the position so far this year. Obviously, they've scored a good amount of goals, so they're not hurting in that way. But they are conscious of the fact that, you know, they've dried up offensively towards the end of the season, historically here over probably the last half decade. So I think they know that if they really want to make a real run at MLS Cup, they need to upgrade in that position. I think they can go with Kyrie Shelton or Daniel Shalvey and play as center forward and make a decent run in the playoffs. But I think if they want to really be a contender, they need to go out and get a number 9. And I think they know that, and I expect them to do it. So we'll see what that looks like here when the window opens and how quickly they're able to get something done, if they do indeed get something done. But in my opinion, I think they need to go out and get one if they want to make a real run at Cup.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the way their goal scoring has gone so far, it's kind of been by one man committee. You had, you know, Gutierrez killing it. Then you had Johnny Russell killing it. Now Shalvey's killing it. And Kyrie's been, a guy who stitches it all together. But if one of those goes dry, you don't have guy on form, you might be in trouble if you're Sporting Kansas City. Do you have any feeling, or did Bliss say where they're looking? Is there a region of the world that's more likely than another?
He was pretty close to the vest with it. He didn't say much about it. Kansas City has a track record, though, of I think looking pretty widely. They do get a lot of guys out of Europe. Peter Vermees has plenty of connections there, but with Kansas City, they're a club that I have pretty solid faith in that they're going to go and find the best guy for them and their budget, regardless of geography.
Craig Weibel, you reported on MLSsoccer.com that he is out of contract at the end of this year, leading the technical side at Real Salt Lake, and it seemed like that Deloy Hansen, the owner there, had been very happy with his work. They've had a little bit of a shaky year so far. What's going on with that? The talks haven't started yet?
Yeah, so talks haven't started yet, which is not that unusual for how RSL have handled things here in the past. The talks hadn't started with Jason Kreis until about this point in 2013 when he ended up deciding to leave the club and head to NYCFC. I believe the same was true with Garth Lagerwey. I believe the same was true with Jeff Kassar. So this isn't something that's really out of the ordinary for RSL. But we'll see. I mean, they could be looking at another shakeup on their technical staff after the year. They certainly face a big decision with Weibel if they want to continue on with him or if they want to go in another direction and have another GM in there. God, what would it be? Like the third in 5 years. That'd be interesting. Certainly face a big decision, but we'll see. We'll see if they start negotiating soon. It's something we'll all need to keep an eye on here as the season progresses.
All right, Sam, tell me about Carlos Salcedo, because everybody's watching him at the World Cup, and they're saying, wait a minute, I saw this guy play briefly, for Real Salt Lake. How did this thing go down? Because I remember when it happened, and it was weird. His move to Mexico, what the club got in return, the playing time situation for him and his dad.
Yeah, so there are a lot of factors when Salcedo moved from RSL after two seasons down to Mexico. I wrote about this week, and people that remember it will remember him putting a tweet out there basically saying, I'm done, don't pick up my option. It's been fun, but, you know, no mas. And at that point, RSL had to have a discussion of, do we want to try and patch this up? Or is it time to wash our hands and say goodbye? Ultimately, they obviously ended up deciding on that route. And because of that, and because they weren't willing to bring him back, Salcedo pretty much had all the leverage in a transfer move. He had clubs interested in him in Mexico. RSL had a $1 million offer with a 25% sell-on for future transfers. It looked like that was going to be all good. And then Salcedo and his dad, who was his agent at the time, backed out at the last moment and sort of dictated a move to Chivas for less than half that price. Instead of for a 25% sell-on fee, a $200,000 one-time fee that would go the first time he went on loan or was transferred by Chivas. So RSL collected that when he went on loan to Fiorentina a couple of years back. And basically since then, his career's blown up. He's obviously starting for Mexico at the World Cup. They made it to the round of 16 by the skin of their teeth there. Playing Brazil on Monday, and he just sealed a permanent move to Eintracht Frankfurt, where he was on loan last season in the Bundesliga. So, I think RSL, they're in an interesting spot. The good thing is they've patched up the relationship with Salcedo. He actually came back and visited last summer and hung out with some old friends, saw Weibel, embraced, did the whole song and dance there. They're proud of his success. He's an academy kid. He played in their academy for a season. Came up, they were his first pro club. But it also is sort of, it's kind of a bitter taste, right, of how it all ended and what might have been. And I think it's sort of a lesson for MLS clubs. Like, hey, when you have this young talent and when you have these kids that are really good, you need to try and integrate them and you need to try and give them some run. And it's, teams need to do a bit of a better job, I think, of finding the balance between winning right now and developing for the future. And that's a tricky equation, and I'm firmly in the camp that kids need to earn their playing time. They shouldn't just be given it. I think if RSL could do that one over again, they would probably play Salcedo a little bit more those first 2 years, or at least certainly the second year, and hopefully ride it out a little bit longer with him before he made a move elsewhere.
Oh, man, so much bird-dogging. Chicago, with Paul Tenorio and Sam Stachko in it, it is just absolutely wonderful. Sam, that's it from us, man. Go follow him at Sam Stachkel. Enjoy your day, dude. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
For sure. Thanks, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back down extra time for radio, driven by Continental. It's mailbag time. We've heard from you. Paul from Houston gets us started here. I think I said on the last show that one man does not a philosophy make. Paul says, I think L. Ron Hubbard would disagree with you, Weeby. So had to start there. Thought that was pretty funny, Paul.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Did you end up watching Wild, Wild Country?
I have not yet, but that is a good one for me to do while I'm in Kansas.
You got to hit it.
It's very hot there. I think we're going to be inside all day long in the middle of the day. So we'll see how that goes. Daniel Pigeon hits us up. He says, with the upcoming U.S. national team friendlies, there's some big matchups coming up for the U.S. this fall. Do any of you want to see any of the, quote, old guard players, Dempsey, Bradley, Howard, etc., get one more appearance in an international game as a thanks and farewell, or should they be forgotten at this point and all our focus put towards the youth movement?
I'd like to see Dempsey get a farewell game, his own testimonial, the same way that Landon did after the 2014 World Cup.
Hartford, baby.
Yeah. So, like, play it in Nacogdoches if you want to, play it somewhere, because Deuce has been that special. To be honest, despite what happened in Trinidad, Howard has been as well. Give him one, give him the first half hour in that friendly at Giant Stadium. It was against Brazil. And say thank you for your decades of service, and we hope you stay involved in the game in some way. Those two guys, I don't think Bradley or Josie or Matt Beisler are done yet. Jeff Cameron probably is, but he's not at the level of Dempsey and Howard, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you don't give him a testimonial. Yeah. No offense. I mean, very few players get testimonials, so it shouldn't be like nobody should feel entitled to one.
Right.
Is the way I think about them.
I find the much more interesting question. Does Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore and some of these other guys, do they not have a role to play?
I think they do have a role to play,
forward.
Which is why you don't.
If Bradley keeps playing the way he's played the last 2 months for Toronto FC, no, he doesn't. No, he does. Like the performance, especially the last 3 weeks.
So it's solely on club form at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Josie, obviously, he's been hurt since the end of the Champions League, but he was arguably their best player in the Champions League, and he was the best player in MLS Cup. And, there's the striker pool is different than the defensive midfield and central midfield pool. Hopefully that Josie gets healthy and can jump back into that mix, because he's still at the, until Josh Sargent does something, Josie's still our best bet.
I'm going to do a story on this in a few weeks. You have your 2022 depth chart that you're going to do, and right after that I'm going to release this story. And for me, the question is any marginal gain of having Michael Bradley on the field over a Chris Durkin, to use your favorite player, does that outweigh just the cultural revolution that needs to take place? And I find that to be a really interesting question, an important one for the new coach to handle. I'm excited to write about it.
You know, Bob, if David's going to perhaps not come back from Russia, but if Bobby, I imagine, was in Russia, like, let's say, 1905, you would be on the streets, man. You would be printing out pamphlets. You would be a very, very stringent revolutionary. I truly believe that. I think you have the...
What's your favorite revolution?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
If you want to know what we talk about, we're not talking about soccer.
Give me a couple minutes to think about that. We'll get back to it. Ryan Sullivan, hey, guys, love the show, and Doyle's epic rant, by the way. A lot of people enjoyed that rant. Question, when LAFC is back to a full squad, how do the new acquisitions of Dio and Horta fit into the lineup? Dio's got 4 goals in 4 games, and although Marco Arena's had amazing season so far, especially given all his assists, did Arena lose his starting spot while he's out with injury and then at the World Cup? How do they fit it all together?
I had a rough night's sleep, and I was literally up at like 4 a.m. thinking about the Urania Dio question.
Oh, my God.
I was literally like laying on the floor.
We need to send you to Russia.
Right? Just thinking about like what happens when Urania and Vela get back? How does this – and when Horta gets eligible? My instinct is always to put the forward who scores in the game. And that's never been Urania, and that has been so far. It has been Diamande. But chemistry is a real thing, and early season LAFC had it. And if Urania, despite his lack of goal scoring, opens up space the way he did in March and April, it's going to be tough to keep him out of the lineup. And as for Horta, I mean – Betty Failhaber and Lee Wynn have been awesome. Have been awesome the last couple of weeks. Like there are good. These are good problems to have if you're Bob Bradley.
Do you think Horta knows what he's walking into?
I doubt it.
The level of competition that's going to be there, because this is not a Lee Wynn and Betty Failhaber. This is not a common expansion midfield, let's say. And let's take a look at what Minnesota's trotted out over the last couple seasons.
Did you just try and shift into Bob voice?
Did I do that? Accidentally? Unconsciously? Just
a little bit, yeah.
Do I pause?
So I've talked
strategically.
I've talked to some people about Horta, and my original thought was that he might be an attacking player. Maybe he starts wide and tucks in. Maybe he's a right behind the forward. There's some chance that Horta ends up being their deepest midfielder, and it's Atuesta or Horta in that role with or behind Failhaber.
Interesting. I've liked that to Atuesta, too. That says something about what they've done building this roster. We'll end here. CM Leota hits us. He says, Yogi Lowe for U.S. national team. Let's go. We haven't talked World Cup. We haven't talked Mexico. We haven't talked Germany. I mean, can we finish it there? Would you take Yogi Lowe? He looked pretty shell-shocked yesterday.
I mean, what could go wrong if you hire a former German national team head coach?
He wouldn't be my pick.
Can we talk about what went wrong? Can we talk? Because I wanted to say this on the show yesterday, and I flubbed it. What went wrong with Germany? Because I do have a thought on this.
I think it was the same thing that went wrong with the U.S. I think they got caught kind of in between generations, and the coach wasn't able to sort of mold that and meld that and make sure that the young guys and the old guys were on the same page. And he trusted a couple of guys at the end of their prime who sort of looked the same. So you think they are the same?
Thomas Müller and Mesut Özil.
And Sami Khedira and even Boateng. These guys, I think, they're not the players they were a couple of years ago. And I also, honestly, I think Bayern Munich, their dominance in the Bundesliga, three-quarters of that season doesn't even matter. They play a lot of games where you can go C-plus and you win. And I think that if I was German, I would be having a serious discussion about whether Bayern Munich is at the point where they help or hurt the German national team.
It's a deep thought.
Yeah,
that is a. People could say that. That to me is like the hottest thing we've ever had said on this show.
I don't know. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah,
it goes. It makes a ton of the point.
I think it makes a ton of sense. But you're talking about redoing the football federation of the team that has been the most dominant over the last 4 years.
I mean, you're saying redoing because
you're talking about redoing the league, redoing the structure, rethinking how they do their national team,
like.
Even if there was a counterbalance within the Bundesliga, yeah. I think you look at La Liga and you have Barca and Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid's pushing into that conversation and can overtake both of them in the league, and Valencia at times can as well.
And if you look at the first half of this decade, like Dortmund was much closer to Bayern Munich in the lead up to 2014 than they've been from 2014 to 2018.
It just feels momentarily reactionary to me. The fact that they just had a bad tournament. 3 months ago, everyone was still saying
they didn't just have a bad tournament. They had their worst tournament ever.
That's fair, but it's one tournament, okay. Right? 3 months ago, we would have said that the German footballing system was the best in the world. They had everything right.
Go ahead.
I mean, the question about Germany is the same about the U.S. men's national team. Was it a single team in a single moment, or was it structural? And I thought that Germany's were about the single team. I mean, how do you not know that teams are going to sit deep? And when they do sit deep, why is Timo Werner your starting striker, a guy who doesn't really thrive in those moments? I mean, if Toni Kroos, your best player, is out of form, why do you give him so much responsibility? How do you not take Leroy Sané, once again, knowing the teams are going to sit deep? This, to me, was a few very specific problems that they had that they just didn't address. I don't know if it was because of arrogance or just not thinking about it in advance.
I'm going to give you one chance before we get out of here, Doyle, to talk Juan Carlos Osorio. He did not make any changes for the first time in 51 games. Same 11, back-to-back. Yeah. Shellacked by Sweden. Thank you to South Korea. Some of those scenes are incredible. Them, like, at the Korean embassy, carrying the guy around. I mean,
it was a party.
It's amazing. The scenes are so incredible. I bet L.A., Koreatown, I bet that was just nuts.
Everybody knows, if they listen to my rant, everybody knows how I feel about Osorio. And I do think that he got a couple of things. Like, I wouldn't have started Vela in this game. He's not a guy who goes 90 minutes or even 80 minutes three times in a week. I think he could have maybe gone a little bit defensive there, maybe put Marco Fabi on there. I thought there were a couple of little personnel changes he could have made, but this was not on Juan Carlos Osorio. This was on the players. This was on a bunch of guys who came out completely flat. They were set up to succeed in the same way that they had succeeded in the previous two games, and they did not meet the moment.
But if you go out and you work your butt off at your physical and emotional max, mm-hmm. How can you – we're all humans, man. Like, humans only have so much in their system. The players could have still gone beyond what they truly had in that moment and still failed as badly as they did. I mean, it's a coach's job to understand the physical, mental, and emotional limitations of his players.
I get that.
It makes me so mad when we blame players for this. The players might have done more than they were actually able to do and still lost 3-0, because that's the fact of how humans are built.
So you would have rotated more.
Yeah, you had to have rotated in that moment.
We'll see. Well, now it's all about round of 16, and Mexican fans know how this generally
is. Do you think he rotates in the round of 16?
Well, this is what I have no idea. I mean, the fact now these guys are clearly need a break.
Monday against Brazil, by the way. Yeah. And Mexican fans will tell you they always perform well against Brazil.
Isn't it Sunday?
Is it Sunday?
I think it's Sunday because our friends at DC United if I'm seeing this correctly, have decided to hold their introductory press conference for Wayne Rooney during the Mexico-Brazil game.
Well,
yeah,
we will,
no, well, you're, it is Monday at 11
a.m. That's what I thought. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's Monday, and I have big plans in Wichita to go watch these World Cup games with my kid and my dad. So if you're in Wichita, I'll be there for the next week doing jack nada, just hanging out. So if you want to watch the World Cup, you got a good place to do it.
Is jack nada a
well, there was another word
Wichita,
in there.
It's
there was
Wichita
another
saying?
Word in there that okay. I didn't.
Who gets to say New York, New York
if you want
while
to play
gone?
Pickup? Nobody.
Nobody?
Nobody. I, you know what? When Furshaw left, and by the way, if you do not listen to Paternal, Nick Furshaw's new podcast, it is absolutely incredible.
Great new interview with Alexi Lalas.
Huh?
Great new interview with Alexi Lalas.
And all of them have been good. I've loved, like, everything he does is just so insightful and smart. So go check that one out. But he had greetings. And I remember when I took this spot here, the host spot, I tried greetings one time. I think it was once, and it just felt like robbery. It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel like me, and I had to come up with the new one. So you can use it once. That's how many instances you've got. After that, you got to come with your own flavor, all right? Hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com, at Extra Time Radio. It's still up in flux. If Bobby wants to take the reins, we'll have a Monday show. If not, I'm on vacation. Dave is in Russia, and we'll see you on Thursday. Rolling the dice. Check the old subscription feed. We'll see you then.